Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. I'm hanging out in a basement. A man is to my right. Breakfast Club is on the television. And I think I'm going to partake in a little bit of cannabis because it's a Friday night.
It's a Friday night and we're at home sitting in our basement. And we were not planning to be recording from home today, but I don't think we had much of a choice.
Why do you mean we didn't have a choice? It seemed to be we always have a choice.
Well, we didn't have a choice because 1 week ago today, I was cut open.
I think they need more than that.
More information. All right. So I was at the gym last Friday morning, and I've been working out probably 3-4 times a week for the last couple of months. Not doing anything too aggressive because this is me slowly getting back into my fitness routine that I basically took a, I don't know, 7-year hiatus from. Not actually. I really stopped working out during COVID. So this is like getting back into it after 4 years of not doing a hell of a lot. And Friday, I decided to go a little harder because I feel like I've been getting a little stronger. And at the very end of my workout, I was suddenly in such excruciating pain that I could barely stand up. And in the meantime, Mark was driving home from a conference. So he was, I don't know, you were probably like 7 hours away from home at least.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah. So I called him from the women's change room of my gym. And I said, I don't know how I'm going to get out of here. I can't move. And it was pouring rain outside. And I sat there until I felt like I had like just enough power in my legs to get out to my car. So I hobbled out to my car, mostly like bent over. I was like a perfect number 7. And I got into my car. And as soon as I sat down in my car, I was like, I can't move. Like, I can't drive. There's absolutely no way. I didn't even feel like I had the strength in my leg or my foot to press the gas pedal. So I sat there on the phone with Mark, him telling me, drive yourself to the hospital, drive yourself to the hospital. And I just realized I never actually said where this pain was. This actually was not from lifting weights at all. I had pain all through my pelvis, my abdomen, everywhere. It felt like something exploded inside of me. And so I'm sitting in the parking lot in the pouring rain. Mark's telling me to drive myself to the hospital. I can't drive. I don't know what to do at this point. And so finally it eases up enough.
You were also like, I'm just going to go home. And I'm like, why are you fucking just going to go home? It's like, let's not be a hero. Let's just go to the hospital.
I don't remember that at all.
I remember saying I was going to go home. You're like, oh, I'm just going to wait here for a little bit and then I'm going to go home. And I'm driving. I'm like, well, why? Let's just fucking go to the hospital. I was like, call an ambulance and go to the hospital. And, you know, because, you know, so many people like I've got pain and discomfort. I'll just wait here. I'm like, no, just go see somebody and figure out what's going on or make sure you're OK or whatever the case is. Like, we've had times before where I'm like fucking stoned in bed and I think something's going on with me. And there's times where I'm just very sure that there's nothing going on. I'm paranoid. I'm stoned and blah, 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 blah. And then there's been one time when I was kind of sort of like half in the bag, but not feeling too hot. And I'm like, I'm going to go to a doctor right now. And so I picked up, I called a buddy and I said, take me to the hospital. I didn't wait to be like, you know, let's see if this goes away. Sometimes I know if nothing's going on, then I'll just ride it out and be like, nah, nothing's really happening. But if I really think something's wrong, I'll pick myself up and I'll go to the hospital.
I think that's normal in most people. I giggled at the don't be a hero thing because
you don't remember me saying that?
It's definitely not
like, don't be a hero. Just go to the hospital.
It's definitely not me to try to be a hero. But I will give a little history as to why I may have said that. So in September of 2022 was the first time I experienced something like this, nowhere near on the same scale. Like, I'm talking September 2022 was maybe like, you know, a 6 out of 10. This was like 10 out of 10. Like, I was in such severe pain. I honestly didn't think I could pick up my legs to even walk. Like, it took everything in me to get myself to the car. But in September 2022, I had pelvic pain like this, and it was really bad. If you were with me, you remember my whole body went into shock, and it was right in the middle of something really important for work. And so that time, I guess I was kind of being a hero. I took some painkillers and just powered through. And eventually the pain subsided. But from that moment on, for the next year, every so often I would get this pelvic pain. And I'm going to like take a little bit of a tangent, but anyone who knows me really well, so Mark, you can vouch for this. I'm pretty easily influenced. I know myself well enough to know that I'm pretty easily influenced. Would you say that's true?
What do you mean by that? I don't even know.
What I mean by that is you can give me a list of symptoms and say, this is, you know, if you have these symptoms, you probably have this problem. And I'm the person that would be like, oh yeah, like I get all of those things. And then suddenly I think there's a possibility I have this problem. Like, I feel like I am easily influenced. I fall for marketing like no other. I know I always joke about that, but if I see something that looks like this is, you know, the best new thing on the market, it's going to solve all of your problems, I'm the best consumer, because I'll be like, yes, this is the best new thing on the market and it's going to solve all of my problems. So the backstory in this is, over the year that I was getting this pelvic pain, I had been doing a lot of like Google searching, and that's the like worst thing you could do is Dr. Google.
Well, I don't think it's the worst thing in the world at all.
Probably not, because you're trying to figure out like what these things could potentially
mean. But I just mean everyone's like, oh, don't Dr. Google. I'm like, why not fucking Dr. Google? Especially since you like to say, and everyone that comes on our couch is like, oh, people don't know about their bodies. They don't know how their body works. So if I got something going on somewhere, then at least Dr. Google may take me to the full extremes, but mm-hmm. then at least I have some idea of potentially something, you know.
I think it's only the worst for, like I said, people like me, but not in this case. And I really shouldn't have convinced myself that I am too easily influenced. So through Google searching,
before you do that, like Dr. Google can sometimes make someone go, oh, this is really nothing.
Mm-hmm.
Right. I got itchy eyes and there's a slight discharge that's coming from them. You know, Dr. Google can make me realize I've got conjunctivitis, or I've got a virus or a bacteria, or I've got allergies.
Yeah.
And then I throw it all together and I'm like, cool, I got some allergies. Let me go see my doctor next week when I can get an appointment, that type of thing, versus running off to the drugstore to get the medicated conjunctivitis drops or whatever the fuck it is.
Yeah. So
I don't know, Dr. Google.
Googling made me really believe that I had symptoms of endometriosis.
And it was a good thing.
Right. So I was already feeling like this is a possibility. Around the same time, you know how there's been sort of a rise in the, or maybe you don't know, but in the last few years, there's been a rise of women my age specifically getting diagnosed with ADHD. And, you know, in some other episodes, I've said like, I have every one of these symptoms. And like, there was a long time where I thought I had just convinced myself that I had the same symptoms as these people. And it got to a point where I felt like almost silly going to a doctor to figure this stuff out. So I was like, if I just convince myself because I'm reading this stuff on Google, and I know this is not the same thing, but I felt the same way about the endometriosis. I was like, it just doesn't make sense. Like, why now? You know, I've had such a, for lack of a better way of saying it, like easy, like reproductive and sexual health history. Like, I've never had any issues with my cycle. I got pregnant very easily. I had the most easy, normal pregnancies, labor, delivery. So I kind of, over the year, although I was feeling like there was a possibility, I also was pushing it to the back of my head, similarly with the ADHD. Well, anyway, this past fall, I decided to actually do something about these things, because nothing was getting better. Things were getting worse. And I went to see my doctor in the fall for both things, actually. And, you know, she really validated me on both ends through some imaging. It was confirmed I had a very small endometrioma on my right ovary. So I did, in fact, have endometriosis, or I do, in fact,
Someone is Googling an endometrioma right now. So why don't you say that so someone doesn't have to pause the podcast to go type it into Google to see exactly what
that is. Endometrioma is where uterine tissue grows outside of your uterus. So there was like deposits of tissue that's supposed, you know, your endometrial tissue that's supposed to grow inside your uterus was growing on my ovary. and it was very small at this time, like no cause for concern. So this was about 4 months ago, or 5 months, maybe 5 months now, 4 or 5 months ago that I got this imaging done. It was very small. And my only instructions were go do a follow-up in 3 to 6 months. At the same time, my doctor also confirmed that you are not imagining things on Google. You do, in fact, have ADHD. Both of those things were just a little bit validating because I hadn't been feeling very normal physically, mentally. Nothing felt normal. Anywho, like a good little girl, while you were away at your conference, I booked my follow-up ultrasound. So on Wednesday of last week, I went and did my follow-up ultrasound and I was just awaiting the results. And then that brings us to Friday. I'm at the gym and I'm really trying to push myself because I'm now like a couple months into working out and thinking I'm getting stronger. I can do a little more. Suddenly I'm in excruciating pain and I sort of instantly know like this has to be something to do with the endometriosis. Now, what I sort of left out of this is that in the last month or to 2 months, we've had a lot going on personally. We've moved homes. There's just been a lot of things happening. And so I can't put an exact timeline. So I was probably ignoring a lot of things, but I do know that I haven't been feeling myself. I've been feeling like it didn't feel good to lay on my stomach. You know, when you got me to be a body for one of your students a few weeks ago, it was really uncomfortable for me to lay on my stomach. I've been feeling really heavy. And although I've been working out so much, and I had said to Mark multiple times, it looks to me like my stomach is getting bigger. Like I look like I'm gaining weight. The scale wasn't really moving, but you know, I wasn't really concerned about that. But I felt like I look like I'm gaining weight rather than losing weight. Like I look like I'm gaining inches. And of course, he's just being the nice, supportive husband and saying, "No, not at all. You're getting leaner." But he'd say, "Like you're getting leaner in your legs." I'm like, "Yeah, that's not what I'm talking about." So I knew something was up because it didn't feel right. So anyway, as you probably can guess where this story is going, I then managed to get myself home. And the only person here was Mark's sweet mother, who I probably scared the crap out of because I walked in here like keeled over in pain, could barely catch my breath. And I said, and you know, actually here, no, you're right. I said to her, "I just need to lay down." Because at this point I'd been like moving around. I was like, "I just want to lay down. Everything hurts. I just want to lay down."
This is the point where I told you don't be a hero, by the way.
But I just needed to lay down. It wasn't about being a hero. Have you ever just been in so much pain? Like you were telling me, go to the hospital. I'm like, there is zero chance. Like, I don't even know how I made it home. The pouring rain that day actually saved me. I was driving probably 20 to 30 kilometers an hour up this. I mean, my gym and our house is on the same kind of like main stretch. So I drove like 30 kilometers an hour, made it here, barely dragged myself into the house. Like I never actually fully stood up, but I dragged myself into the house and then I just needed to lay down. So I was laying down and finally it hit me. Like, as Mark said, there's sometimes when you know, like, okay, I'm just tripping out or this is going to calm down. Like, it hit me in that moment when I laid down in our bed. I'm like, I need to see a doctor. This is really, really bad. So Mark told me to call an ambulance. And I did. And I don't know if anybody else knew that this could happen or knows someone that this happened to, but we called an ambulance. And so it was actually my mother-in-law who called and they were asking her questions so I could hear her answering them. Like, when is my birthday, my age, this, that, you know, and then when they started asking about the pain, she said, "Well, I think she can speak. Let me put you on to her." So she put the phone on speaker and put it beside me. I was still like laying down. And they asked me, like, "Did you faint or lose consciousness?" I said, "No." They asked me, "Are you vomiting? Do you feel nauseous?" I said, "No." I think they might have asked if I had a fever, like a few questions, or like if I had chest pain, if I was having trouble breathing, like things that, of course, sound like really, really serious. And I said, "No, no, no." And I explained to her, like, "I am in so much pain. I can't walk. Like, I cannot get to the hospital, but I need to get to the hospital." And they basically told me no. Did you know that they could do that? They would do that?
I don't know much about that stuff. Every time I've ever had to call EMS, it's been really, really fast. I've never had this experience, and I've had to call EMS once for myself that I can remember, maybe even more for myself, but there's one time for myself and twice for my father, and in all of those scenarios it was really, really fast. So
well, this day
that was also
yeah, I was told, the woman on the phone said to me, "It doesn't sound like you need an ambulance. I'm going to have a public health nurse call you." And I couldn't even get words out. I just was like, okay. And we hung up. And I think you were on the phone with your mom when this happened. I have a vague memory of like her talking to you and you telling her like, you're going to have to drive. And as I said, it's pouring rain. Mark's mom doesn't typically drive in pouring rain. You know, that makes her really nervous. She's uncomfortable. But she said to me, "I'm going to take you to the hospital." And I had no choice. I had to go. So I literally rolled out of bed.
So what do you do in a scenario when you live by yourself? You have no transportation. You don't own a vehicle. You live by yourself.
Well,
you're not even location-wise close to any kind of hospital or anything like that. Like, no, we're not coming for you.
Well, that's what your mother was saying. She goes, what would have happened, like, the day before, again, you were away, and the day before, she had an appointment in the morning. I was home alone the whole morning the day before. She said, what if this happened yesterday? I wouldn't have even been here to take you. Like, anyway. So at this point, I couldn't even think about that, right? It was just like, I need to get to the hospital. So I rolled out of bed because I couldn't stand, like literally kind of just fell on the floor, dragged myself to the bathroom because I felt like maybe I should pee. I don't know. Maybe I should pee before I go to the hospital. Tell me you have kids without telling me you have kids. You should pee before you get in the car. Mm. So I dragged myself to the bathroom. And as I'm in the bathroom, I'm getting a call, and it didn't hit me right away. Oh, this is going to be the nurse, because they told me I'm going to have a public health nurse call you. So I answered the call. It was, in fact, a public health nurse. And they're asking me every single question that the EMS people did. So I'm answering all the questions again. And at the very end of the call, the nurse said to me, "Amanda, you need to go to an emergency room right away." And I said, I'm trying. Like, I'm trying. So I don't even know how I got downstairs.
Huh.
Honestly, I have no memory of getting from our bedroom, which is on the second floor of the house, to the front door.
And I was even telling you, take the lift, when you said, "I'm just going to go upstairs and lie down." I'm like, well, at least take the lift up.
You know what? The reason I didn't, though, is even sitting was really hard. I thought I would fall off the lift. Like, I didn't.
There's a seatbelt on it.
Oh, I didn't think I could sit on it to get up or down the stairs. So I guess I did either walk down the stairs or kind of slide. I don't know. But I got down the stairs and I remember walking to the car. Again, it's raining. I'm walking to the car. And as I'm walking to the car, I'm holding my cell phone and I call my mom, and I've got her on speaker. And at this point, it's about 11 or 1130 in the morning. And I said, "I'm going to the hospital. Can you pick up my kids from school this afternoon?" Like, even in that moment, I knew, like, this is not going to be a quick in and out. Like, the level of pain I was in, I was like, I'm going to be there all day. My kids are at school. So I call my mom and she's like, "Okay, no problem. Let me know what's going on." So now she's kind of stressed out. So I get in the car with your mom. We get to the hospital. And the pain by this point, like, once I got into the hospital, almost seemed like it was getting a little better. And I was thinking, oh, thank God, like, I need a little bit of relief. So when I went to sit with the nurse in triage, she was like, "What's your pain level right now?" And I'm like, maybe like a 6 or 7. Like, it kind of seemed like it was easing off a little bit. And then she sent me to do a blood test and a urine test. And within the few minutes that I left her and went to go get my blood work and go do the urine test, I'm back at like 11 out of 10. And now the pain is radiating into my shoulder. So now, like, my whole pelvis and abdomen are uncomfortable, but now my shoulder hurts. I can't find any single position where I'm not in excruciating pain. But then I'm thinking, I told her I'm a 6 out of 10. Like, I'm not important anymore. So then I'm thinking, like, nobody's going to come see me. Like, the worst thoughts are going through my head at this point. I get sent around to a bunch of tests. I get sent to do ultrasounds, blood work. And at some point, probably late afternoon, you're back. You come and meet me in the emergency room. But by the time you got there, I had an IV with pain meds, didn't I?
Yeah.
So, like, didn't I seem perfectly fine when you got there?
Yep.
Yeah. Like, we were just talking. We were laughing. I'm just happy to see him. I hadn't seen him in, like, 4 or 5 days. Like, and I'm thinking, okay, we're going to go do an ultrasound. It's probably, like, an ovarian cyst or something. Like, you know, nothing to be too alarmed about. And the way I was feeling, I thought I might even get to go home very soon. And, you know, I might get some pain meds. Maybe, you know, then I'll have to do a follow-up to figure out what we're going to do about this cyst. Or then I thought maybe a cyst ruptured. Like, that was the kind of pain I was in. But like I said, right now I have this IV with pain medication. So I'm thinking, I'm good. I'm going to go home soon. And then they tell us to go back to diagnostic imaging to get a CT scan. Mm-hmm. So for some reason, that's when I got a little fishy, because I was like, well, they already did an ultrasound. Like, I feel like the ultrasound would have showed if it was a cyst or if there was a rupture. I'm like, why am I going for a CT scan? And then I started to get really nervous and I started thinking all the worst things.
Like what?
Like cancer, really, was the first top thing on my mind when I was being sent for the CT scan. I'd never had a CT scan before. I'd never had contrast before. So when I went in there and they told me, like, oh, it'll feel warm. Well, apparently my IV needle, like, kind of slipped from the vein a little bit. Like, I don't really understand. But, I mean, it was the same needle that was inside my hand all day and had been through multiple blood work and, you know, the IV and all this stuff. And they put the contrast in. And Mark was in the waiting room. And I asked him when I came out, I'm like, did you hear me? I screamed. It felt like burning acid was being shot into my hand. It was so painful. So I did the CT scan, and as we were sitting there, just before I got called to go in, actually, I forgot about this, my phone's ringing, and I look at my phone, and I said to Mark, I'm getting a phone call from the hospital we're sitting in. He's like, what? So I pick up this call, and it was the nurse that did my last blood test. And she said, are you still here? And I said, well, of course I'm still here. You guys told me to go get a CT scan. She goes, good. Get the CT scan, come back and see me for one more round of blood work, and then you're going to Centenary Hospital. Mm-hmm. Now I'm thinking that, like, if I thought I was thinking the worst going to the CT scan, now I'm thinking, like, I'm fucking dying. Like, why are they transferring me to another hospital? What is happening?
What do they do if you were by yourself? Do they discharge you and say, okay, go to the other hospital? How does that work?
I have no idea what would have happened. I don't know if they would have, like, arranged for, like, an ambulance to take me. I don't know. I have no idea.
Huh. The same person that lives by yourself and has no mode of transportation to get there. And then you find yourself maybe in a cab, in an Uber, and you get there. And then you're there all day long, worrying, and then doing some assessments or some imaging. And then to find out, okay, now you got to go to another hospital. Imagine that you're all there fucking just by yourself. And then there's a lot of people that do that or don't have any transportation. Then what the fuck are you going to do? Jesus Christ, it would take you forever. This is like a 3-day adventure at this point then.
Yeah, and the moment they told me I had to go to the other hospital, it was also 5 o'clock on a Friday in Toronto. So let's just recognize that I knew this was also not going to be fast. So I got the CT scan. Like I said, it hurt like hell. I go back to the other nurse. She takes my blood. And while I'm, you know, at the nurse's station, the doctor that originally assessed me at the beginning is there. And he says, come here. And he shows me the picture. It's the CT scan. So the results haven't been uploaded yet. But the picture is up on his screen. And he's showing me. And he shows me, like, a small little outline with his finger. He goes, see that? And I said, yeah. He's like, that's your urinary bladder. And then he does this massive outline with his finger. He goes, you see that? And I said, yeah. He goes, we don't know what that is.
Jeez.
I'm like,
that's scary.
What the fuck? He's like, we don't know what that is. He said, it's 18 centimeters. It's about the size of a volleyball. And we don't know what it is. So now I'm shitting my pants, of course, thinking like, again, the worst case scenario. And I'm reading his reports. And of course, the top of the list on his reports is a sarcoma. Like, why wouldn't he think this is cancer? It's taking up majority of my fucking pelvis and abdomen. It's everywhere. They can't see my ovaries. They can't see anything because there's just this massive thing and they don't know what it is. So he tells me, I've already contacted this gynecologist. This is her name. She's at Centenary. She's waiting for you. Go there now. I actually skipped one part. I had told Mark this when he arrived. When I got my ultrasound earlier that day, the ultrasound technician, I said to him, it was like she stared into my soul. Like normally technicians don't say anything. They have to give the results to the radiologist who reads them and then sends the report to the doctor. And she like stared into my soul and she said, go see a gynecologist. This is huge. She didn't say what it was. She just said, this is huge. And that's all she told me. So the doctor looks at Mark and says, can you take her right now? I mean, of course he's going to take me. So we're driving to Centenary and the whole way there, Mark's trying to be like, you know, just upbeat and not let me stress out. I have no idea what he's saying, but I know he's like just chatting with me and trying to be funny and prevent me from having a complete meltdown. And at one point, I just remember you saying to me, like, do you want me to stop talking? And I was like, yes, please. Because I wasn't even listening to him. Like just a million things were going through my brain. Like, what am I about to go find out? Like, all I know is there's something the size of a volleyball inside of me and the doctors don't know what it is. Like, that's the information I have right now. It's 5 o'clock on a Friday. We're in fighting traffic trying to get to the second hospital. And then we get there and we were sort of under the impression we'd walk in and like a doctor would literally be there with like an airport sign, like waiting for us. That was not the case. But instead we walk in. And they send us to do all the steps that you would do in an emergency room, like go to registration, like go to triage, then you go to registration, then you have to go sit in the waiting room. And thank God I had Mark there because, one, I'm like, you know, don't have my nifty little IV with my pain medication anymore. So I'm starting to get pretty uncomfortable again. Still not as bad as I was in the morning. Mm. And he just goes over to the desk and he's like, we're not supposed to wait. We're supposed to see this doctor. She apparently knows we're coming. And there was one nurse there. And I was like, that nurse knows her shit. Like she's obviously got experience. She knows how to handle like scared and angry people in the emergency room. And she says to Mark, sir, come talk to me. And she pulls him aside. And the first words out of her mouth are, you're right. And I was like, see, that's how you do it. That's how you calm someone down. Just tell them they're right. So she says to him, you're right. Your wife is supposed to be seen right now. She said, the thing is, when it comes to the gynecologist, they could be in a C-section. They could like, we don't know where she is, but she has been alerted. She knows you're here. You're going to be seen. And then somebody else, I don't know if it was a doctor or a nurse, because I wasn't looking. I had my head against the wall, you know, eyes closed most of the time. But somebody else chimed in and said, there's a free room for them around the corner. Do you remember who that was?
No.
No. Okay. Well, anyway.
I remember it happening, but I don't know. I wasn't paying attention to who I was talking to be honest with you.
Yeah. Well, we got sent into a room. So I guess this is about 6 o'clock now. We sit in this room and for the next 2.5 hours, we sit there. We don't really get a lot of attention from people. One ER doctor comes in just to basically reiterate the same information to me. You have a very large possible cyst-like or tumor-like growth. We don't know what it is. We're going to get the gynecologist to come see you. We don't know how long it'll be. We don't know what she's doing. She knows you're here. She'll be here when she can be here. Mm. And we just sit there and we wait and we wait and we wait. And about 8:30 p.m., the cutest little doctor walks in. Seriously, like I kind of want to pinch her cheeks a little bit. It's not very respectful to say about a doctor, is it?
But it's a little strange.
She's so cute. And she comes in and she also just has like a really calm energy. And she was not, I don't know. I guess I was expecting somebody like to be kind of like, I don't know. She was matter of fact, but she had a really good bedside manner. So she comes in and she stands right beside me and she puts her hand on my shoulder and she said, "You have what looks to be an 18 centimeter endometrioma on your ovary. And I think you're going to have an operation." And I just looked in her eyes and I said, "Okay, when?" And she said, "Today." So this all happens, like I said, about 8:30 p.m. on a Friday night. Mark is actually scheduled to leave again the next morning. So now I'm trying to keep myself calm, okay? Like, I'm not trying not to freak out, and I'm thinking, what choice do I have? This has to come out. We don't know what it is. So I'm still a little scared about what it is, right? Like, I'm not feeling too hot right now. And in that moment, all I could think was like, okay, I'm going to need you to go home and get me some things. I literally came from the gym. Like, I'm sitting there in my tight, like, yoga pants and my sports bra and, you know, a stinky fleece that I had over top. I'm just a mess. So I'm thinking, if I'm going to have surgery and I'm going to have to be here, like, I need you to go home and get stuff. So she explained to me that because I didn't know what it was, it could be, you know, a laparoscopic surgery where they do like 3 or 4 incisions and I could probably leave the hospital within 24 hours, or they might have to cut me right open. Like, there's no guarantee of what's going to happen. It could be, you know, they take this thing out, it's easy peasy. It could be that I have a twisted ovary. Could be that it's stuck to a whole bunch of other organs. Like, they have no idea. So I send Mark home with a list, and like, thinking back now how ridiculous my list was is funny. Like,
what do you mean?
Well, I'd never had surgery before. I wasn't thinking, and this is all I asked him to get. A pair of pajama pants, but like no other pants, by the way, just so I'm going to be in the hospital, but I just a pair of fuzzy pajama pants, a pair of socks. What else did I ask for? A t-shirt, my hoodie, my phone charger, a toothbrush, my glasses, my contacts, my contact case.
I don't know.
I think that was about it.
I don't remember.
Anyway, the point is, it just like wasn't enough stuff. I really didn't think about the aftermath of the surgery, you know, the recovery part of what was actually going to be practical. Anyway, doesn't matter. He comes home to do this and he's all flustered. Like, he just came home from one conference, is leaving the next day for another one. So he comes home, gets me a bunch of stuff, comes back. In the meantime, I am thinking, I can't do this without him. I can't do this by myself. So I try to connect with the person that organized the conference he's going to say like, hey, this is what just happened. Like, I found out right now that I have to have surgery and Mark's supposed to leave in the morning. Like, what are our options here? And the most disheartening message came back. Not like, hey, are you okay? Is everything all right? It was, oh my God, that's crazy. And then just a million questions like, how long is it going to take? And like, I was kind of trying to say like, can he get out of this? Like, I really need him. And then I got another message back saying like, it would be really tough for us to change things around right now. And I didn't even know what to say. I was just so speechless because I was like, I get that as somebody who does the type of work we do. I get that. But I was like, wow, there wasn't even like an ounce of empathy for me there. And in that moment, I just felt so shitty. Like, also because this is a person that I thought that I had a good relationship with. So, it was feeling really shitty. And Mark gets back to the hospital. I'm thinking, okay, I'm just going to think really positively that this is going to be the easier of the two surgeries. And I will be okay. I will figure it out. I will be able to recover without him here. I have family. I have friends. Like, I'll be fine. And so I'm, you know, trying not to seem like I'm terrified or seem like, you know, my world is ending right now. When he comes back, I'm trying to be like really okay and fine. And, you know, I can see he's stressed out and I'm like, it's fine. I'm going to be fine. This is good. Like, I'm fine. But like, I was screaming inside. I'm also like really, really upset that he is going to leave. But because I know he's stressed too, I'm like, okay, I'm not going to put that on him because I don't think he knows what to do in this moment. Like, he was just as flustered as I was, like trying to figure this all out in this moment. But I was like, just hoping that he would say, like, I'm not going. I'm going to be here. But then I started to get more calm again. Like, it's going to be fine. Like, how hard can this be?
I didn't fully understand. This is how my week went, and I'm not saying anything, like, I'm not comparing, because there's no comparison, but just to give you an idea of when I arrived, like, this state that I was in, to make any decision on anything. Monday of that week, we have a friend who is an instructor, and he does a lot of teaching at conferences and blah, 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 blah. And because we run this massage therapy media thing, he asked, how much would it cost me to have you come down to this conference that I'm teaching at and do some video of my class? Let's capture the weekend. And that way I've got, you know, video content that I can use however I want. I've got social media content, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, hey, man, like, we're cool. You don't have to pay me. Just pay for my accommodations and then we'll call it a day. And that way, you know, he's also giving me permission to use the content as well on whatever way I want to.
And it was a cute little place you got to stay at.
So now I'm driving on Monday to New Hampshire. So it's a 9-hour drive. Driving's not a big deal for me. I don't really get tired driving. But I also don't sleep well when I'm away. I don't. I end up sleeping maybe 2 hours, 3 hours. 3 hours probably tops.
I don't think you slept at all.
In a night, right? And so I get there after the 9-hour drive, chill out for a little bit, go to sleep. This conference is not starting late. This conference is starting early. And now I've got to go. It's day one, so I got to go set up a whole bunch of shit. So I got to be there really fucking early. So I'm there early again. I hadn't slept well because I don't sleep well when I'm not at home, just because I like my bed and that's the way I sleep. Then I work all fucking day. Cool, because it's a full day. The class runs from, I don't know, fucking 8 to 5, 8 to 6 or something like that. So you work all fucking day. Then you eat something. Then you have a little bit of a drink. Then you go back to the fucking room. And I'm lying in my room. And the fucking couple that's next door this night is going at it like fucking crazy. Just nonstop. It's loud. And I'm uncomfortable.
I forgot about that.
Yeah. And so I'm like,
he FaceTimes me. It looks like he's seen a fucking ghost. Like, he's like, I don't know what to do.
I'm like, come on. I just want to tell. And this was like, this is a really nice place. It's like this old heritage kind of fucking area. Anyway. So, but this room is like an adjoining room. So it's not even like there's a thick wall between us. There's literally these two doors between us. So I'm hearing fucking everything. And I'm just like, I don't want to sit here. Like, this is weird. So I pick up and I go down to the bar.
Yeah.
So I drink a little bit. Everything shut her down in that place, like, really early. Anyway, so then I go back to my room. At least I'm a little tipsy. But again, I don't sleep well because they're still going at it. It's noisy at this point.
Yeah.
So again, I get my 3 hour sleep. And then I get up and we do this whole thing again. This is going Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday that I'm recording stuff.
Yeah, you did 3 days of work there.
And then Friday morning, I get up early because I'm like, I'm going home today. I haven't been home. I haven't seen my kids. I haven't seen Amanda, blah, 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 blah. I haven't done anything. So I'm like, I'm not even going to why am I going to wait till checkout? Or why am I, like, I'm actually just going to get myself up early and start going. That way I can get home early enough. And I'm even thinking, hey, if I make it by 3:30, I can pick up the kids. And I'm timing this out. Like, I'm going to surprise them. I'm going to be the one to pick them up. Or they're going to see me in the parking lot, that type of thing.
Yeah.
And so I wake up really early and I drive. And then maybe 2 hours into my drive, that's when I talk to you. And you're like, my stomach's bothering me. And I think I need to go. And it's not even that. We first had that conversation. And then I'm driving. And then I get on the phone with one of our conference partners and we're talking shop. We're making plans for certain things. And he's asking me questions about some stuff. And I'm like, I think this is what the answer might be, but let's Amanda will really know. Let's call her in right now.
Oh, right. Because I didn't stay on the phone with you when I left the gym. So I'm sitting in the car.
This was a long time after. This is like 30, 40 minutes after we had that conversation.
That's how long I was sitting in my car.
And so you pick up the phone. We start talking to you. You don't sound normal, but I'm like, she was uncomfortable. So maybe she's just still uncomfortable. And then we're still kind of talking. And you're like, guys, I got to go. I think I need to go to the hospital. And I'm like 7 hours away in a car. I hadn't slept more than fucking 10 hours for the past 3 days.
Well, that's what
I had just driven 9 hours.
The whole thing was a shit show.
I had just driven 9 hours before. And so now this is going on. So then by the time I show up to the hospital, I had not slept the whole week. I had driven down. I had now driven back 9 hours in the car, and I show up at the hospital. I'm fucking tired. I have no clue what's going on at all, right? And then now we end up going to another hospital, and now we're waiting to see the gynecologist. And then gynecologist finally comes, and then now we got to wait for surgery. And so all this is happening. I'm like, I have no idea what's going on.
And that's why I said I didn't want to make you more stressed out, because I also knew what your week was. We talked like multiple times every day. So I'm thinking like, okay, this is going to be fine. But like I said, I never really like thought about the after part of the surgery, never thought about the recovery part. So for example, when I was asking him to pick stuff up, I didn't think of things like, I don't know, slippers. Like, would I have to get up in my hospital bed and go pee? Like, just things that would have been common sense if this was a planned surgery. I don't know, clothes that, like, are baggy and loose because I'm going to be swollen and I'm going to be, you know what I mean? Like, these things I didn't think of. Anyway, so now it's go time. We wait. All of a sudden, it just happened really fast. This nurse comes in and she says, okay, we're going to take your vitals. And then a few minutes later, another nurse comes in and has me change completely into this gown and says, okay, we're going to go to the OR. And I don't know if you remember this, but I stood up and she's like, what are you doing? And I was like, I thought we were going to the OR. Like, I thought I had to walk there. I got up to walk to the OR. She's like, no, we're going to take you on this stretcher. So I lay down and it was just the weirdest thing. Like, I'm rolling on this stretcher and I know Mark's behind me. I can't see him, but I'm thinking like, holy shit, is this really happening? Like, literally 12 hours ago, I was at the gym and suddenly I had stomach pain. And like, now I'm on the stretcher and I'm going for surgery to remove something. Like, they were fairly certain it was an endometrioma, but it just wasn't making sense. Like, everybody was really confused. Like, how was it so small 4 months ago on an ultrasound that they said, just, you know, check on it again in 3 to 6 months. And now it's, you know, the size of a volleyball. So anyway, I go into, get into the OR. For anyone who's ever had surgery, this was my first time. I had no idea what to expect. So I'm laying in this OR. One, I'm freezing. I feel like a slab of meat on like a butcher's table. I'm freezing. And then they see that I'm shaking everywhere. They suddenly come in with all these heated blankets and put them all over me. And I'm like, the relief. Now I'm comfortable. But on my left side, so I'd already been when I was still with Mark, introduced to the anesthesiologist and, you know, all the people that are going to be there. So there's two surgeons that are going to be working with me. There's the anesthesiologist, there's a nurse, and there's somebody else who was making a lot of noise. But the two surgeons are to my left, and you know, they're just waiting for their part in this whole thing, right? This is just another day at work to them. And I had to remind myself that this is just another day at work. And the two of them are to my left talking about grocery shopping. I'm like, oh yeah, the oranges were on sale. Oh yeah, yeah, okay. I'm gonna go buy some oranges in the morning. Like, it was so bizarre. And then there's somebody to my right, I guess, getting stuff together, but she's making a ton of noise. And then the anesthesiologist comes to me and he says he's going to start the medication. And again, that IV in my hand that had kind of popped out of the vein where the CT contrast felt like burning acid, the drip starts and I say to him, it stings. And the last thing I remember is he said, that'll stop soon. And that's it. And
boom.
That's it. It was wild. It was like a movie. It was like, that'll stop soon. And then I remember nothing. Mark asked me in recovery, like, what is it like when you, like, when they put you under, like, is it like you're dreaming? Or I said, no, it's like literally 2 hours of my life were erased. It was just 1 minute. It was, you know, 11 p.m. and I'm going into surgery. Next minute, I open my eyes. There's a nurse standing above me who goes, wow, you're wide awake. I look to my right. There's a clock. It's 1:15 in the morning. And she goes, do you want a popsicle? And I went, yes. And then she starts listing flavors. And I just remember pointing, like, as if I knew where the popsicles were. But I must have, because she did go that direction. Mm. I remember pointing to, like, my right, like, towards my feet and to my right and going, banana. And suddenly I had a banana popsicle at 1:15 in the morning and I'm eating it. And I hear one of the surgeons say everything went really well. And that was it. Like, that was the only discussion I had with them. But they came and talked to you, right?
The doctor did, yeah, the surgeon.
Yeah. So what did they tell you? Do you remember anything of what they told you?
Not really. I mean, they said everything went fine. They told me the procedure that they did. And then they told me to text your mother because I would forget. And I did forget, so they had to remind me.
Well, I said that to the surgeon right before we went into surgery. I said to her, do me a favor. When you go update my husband with what's going on, remind him to text my mother.
Yeah, well, she did. And then I did. So
anyway, so the end result of this whole thing, they brought me up to my room and Mark got kicked out probably between 2 and 3 in the morning. Which was fine. He had to go rest at least for a little bit because he had to be on a flight the next morning. Did you sleep at all?
Not really. I got home at about 3. I'm still not packed to go away. All I have is a suitcase of dirty clothes that I wore for the days before.
Yeah.
So now I'm just kind of scramble stuff together. And I didn't really sleep. I must have laid down for an hour or so. Because I realized I needed to get some stuff that I didn't have because I wasn't planning to not come home. So I had to step out really early in the morning to run to the drugstore and get some stuff. So I was up really early. I probably got like an hour of lying down and I wasn't even really sleeping because I'm just worried and thinking about stuff.
Well, the next morning, I slept that night. I mean, I was still medicated that night, so I didn't feel terrible, I guess. But the next morning when I woke up, that's when it hit me, like, how much pain I was in and how I really had no idea what had just happened. And I realized, like, I can't even roll over in bed. I can't stand up by myself. Like, what the hell just happened? It all just, like I said, just happened so fast. Anyway, the surgeon eventually came and talked to me and told me that they had to remove what ended up being a very large endometrioma. They drained roughly 2 liters of blood from it. And I think I learned actually afterwards from Mark, because I was misunderstanding, that they had to take out part or all of one of my ovaries. And this is a stage 4 endometriosis and it's super aggressive. And I'm in for some shit now, but at least that thing is gone. I'm really, really curious, like, once all of my bruising and swelling is gone, because I'm only a week out, so I'm still not 100% recovered. But I'm really curious to see how much lighter I might feel. Like, how often was I telling you, like, I feel heavy. I feel heavy. This feels heavy.
I don't know. I feel like that's a trick question.
I kept saying that to you. It's not a trick question. Feels like a trick question. I kept telling you, I feel heavy. So I'm really...
Even that's a trick question right there, too.
Well, it wasn't meant to be. I felt like something was really wrong. So really curious to see if I feel lighter. I feel like I already kind of do, even though I'm still like somewhat swollen. Really curious if... Yeah, if it just changes the way I'm feeling in general.
You know what? You know at the beginning when you're like, how you would say, oh, I'm going to the gym and I'm not getting any smaller in my abdomen, blah, 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 blah. And you would, you hinted at like, I would just be, how did you say it?
Well, what were the words you used? I said you were being like supportive and you'd right. say like, no, you are, okay. You're getting leaner.
You know
whatever.
What though? I feel like had you said, like, I don't think something's right in my abdomen. I think it's like, there's no reason why I'm not losing at my abdomen. Can you tell me, what do you think? Have I been getting, then I think I would have, might have answered differently. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
If it didn't feel like it was like, you know, that typical, you know, do I look okay? Does this dress look good? Are these jeans
too
tight?
But I did tell you that it didn't feel right.
I understand, but I feel like I'm not defending anything. There's nothing to fucking defend, but I feel like, and I can't answer for certain, but just thinking about it now, I might have like analyzed a little further than like do a quick glance. I'm like, no, everything's fucking normal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I might have put more attention to it. Not that me putting attention to anything makes any fucking difference, but you know what I mean?
Yeah. But like I said, I just knew. So I'm curious to see how it's going to feel laying on my stomach eventually when I can do that, when I'm healed, because that got really weirdly uncomfortable too. I couldn't lay on my stomach without feeling uncomfortable. So it all makes sense now. Like looking back, I feel like there were definite signs sooner that, you know, I should really do something about this. But I kept thinking like, oh, I have endometriosis and maybe this, you know, this is just pain from that, and it's, you know, I'm gonna go for an ultrasound, and you know, I really couldn't have imagined it would have been this aggressive.
Let me ask you a question, because I've never had any kind of surgery or anything like that. Nothing that's been that has changed the quality of my life, or the whatever the procedure is, has changed the quality of my life. After you get a surgery like that, do you feel some weird sort of gratitude and debt towards this doctor or your surgeons or the team or whatever the case is? Or is it just like, that's just their job, and because of that, you know, they just did their job type of thing. But because they did their job, your quality of life potentially is going to just skyrocket. So is there this certain weird amount of gratitude that you have towards that, or even the feelings of like, I really fucking owe this person, they're special to me now?
I never thought about a debt. I don't think I feel that. I feel it like it's not a weird amount. Like I feel an immense amount of gratitude to this surgeon. And like I said, she just made me so comfortable immediately. And even when we went for my follow-up appointment a few days ago, which you came with me, like I just feel like, okay, I'm going to be okay. Like she's the person that's going to make sure I'm okay. So yeah, I'm definitely grateful to her. And it was just from the minute she walked in, like I had a whole bunch of other doctors saying to me, we don't know what this is. We don't know what this is. Like she didn't lead with that. It was like the nurse who came to you and said, sir, let me talk to you. You're right. Like she just knew what to say. She came in and said, you have what looks to be a large endometrioma. And like I said, she was like matter of fact, but in the nicest way. And she said, I think you're going to have an operation. And like, she just told me straight up there were like, she didn't come in and like, hi, how are you? And let's chat about things. It was just, hi, this is my name. This is what I'm seeing. This is what I think we need to do. And I just looked in her eyes and I like immediately felt like, okay, I just trust you. I'm just going to do what you tell me to do right now. So yeah, definitely very grateful.
Do you think if you saw
her,
that doctor's full face, it might have had a different impression?
I would love to see her full face.
You know,
I have no idea what she looks like. If I ran into her at the mall today, I would not know.
Does being that doctor with that mask on make them more trustworthy or less trustworthy?
I don't know. I didn't really think of it just because, I mean, every doctor you see right now has a mask on.
I know. I feel like if I was going to tell someone, you're going to have to go for surgery today. I know you weren't expecting it. I might have just let them see my face.
Yeah, I truly have no idea what she looks like because I didn't see her face. But, I mean, I saw her eyes.
There was someone in my class today. She was in a mask all weekend. You know, I don't care. It's, you wear a mask, you feel like wearing a mask. But I would always poke a little bit at her. Like yesterday when we did a group picture, I'm like, come on into the picture. She's hustling in. I'm like, you know what? No one even knows what you look like anyway. Let's just get into the picture. And then today I was, cracking some jokes in the class a little bit. And she was behind me. I'm like, are you laughing? Are you smiling? Like, do you think this is funny? I can't tell.
Oh, the poor girl.
Well, I know she enjoyed it. She enjoyed the cracks about it. And I'm not making cracks about people that wear masks. Fuck, no. I don't care. Do whatever you want. But, you know, hey, there's a little bit of funny in everything.
There was,
I don't know, maybe this story.
No, this, I mean, so there was a little bit of funny in this. Like I said, this all, like, started 2 years ago. I had this thought that I sort of suppressed because of my symptoms that maybe I have endometriosis. Then it's confirmed and it seems so minor. And I just feel like, okay, I'm like part of this club of women that has endometriosis. And like, sometimes I'm going to have pain and it's going to suck. And it's like, I just find out about this thing. And then 4 months later, I have a volleyball sized growth removed out of me. Like the fact that it was even that big. And I mean, I don't know, for people who don't know, I'm pretty tall. And one of the doctors said to me, you're lucky you're so tall because this thing had so much room that it like really didn't affect your organs much. It affected one part of my bowels a little bit, but like it's minor damage compared to what it could have done. And I was like, or am I unlucky? Like, would this all have been detected earlier if I was shorter?
Yeah, but you also see better at concerts and stuff.
I am pretty tall.
So
there's the trade-off.
The lady that wore the mask today, she was tiny. Like, I'm not a very tall guy at all. She was like way tinier than me. Like, I towered over her. And her partner all weekend was a fucking giant. It was biggest physical mismatch I've ever seen in my life.
How did they end up being
partners?
And
it was hilarious to watch them work together. No joke, because this guy, honestly, he's probably...
I know him. I know who was in your class. Almost, I know this guy. He's enormous.
Yeah, he's probably like, I don't know.
6'5".
Six, 6'5" to 6'8". That's still pretty tall.
Yeah, he's a big
right?
dude.
Especially next to me. I'm fucking 5'4 and a quarter. I'm like Bruno Mars size. Do you know what I mean? Anyway, so those two were partners all weekend. Anyway, sorry. I didn't mean to just jump in on your story.
No.
It just made me think of some stuff.
My story is done. We just decided to record this at home tonight because obviously with all the recovery I've been doing, I've had to step back from being at work. My doctor says, you know, within 2 weeks, I can probably go back to working, you know, not being crazy. I'm not going to be treating like 6 people a day, which I never did anyway. So it's okay. But for right now, I still get tired pretty easily. I still have pain. I still have swelling. My belly button is all sorts of colors. I'm still bruised. I haven't even actually removed the suture tape. Today was the day that I'm allowed to, but haven't done it yet. Maybe that'll be for tomorrow.
I want to see.
Do you? Yes. I don't know.
Why not?
I don't know.
I also watch Dr. Pimple Popper, so like, let's just go for it.
That's true. You're not really grossed out by things.
No.
I don't think I could be a nurse, man. Watching some of the shit that these people were doing, I'm like, I don't know. I don't know if it's for me.
Plus, then you'd have to get an OnlyFans, I think, if you became a nurse.
I would have to.
Didn't you guys already tell me that was a trend?
I told you I knew some nurse with
there was
OnlyFans.
You and another guest that was on, and we were talking about that. This is before I didn't, before I knew exactly what an OnlyFans was. I'm like, is this like a, is this a thing for people to get famous, or do people can really make money off of this? And then we start talking about, it was, oh, I remember who it was now.
I don't.
I remember who it was.
I don't.
Okay, cool.
Anyway.
Allie from California.
Yes. Okay. That's right. Well, we wanted to tell this story from our couch at home because I haven't been to work. So we didn't want to stay completely quiet because that would be weird. We talk for a living. So I'm still here. I'm recovering. Next week, I will probably be in the office doing some minor things, no treating. I've contacted all of my clients, you know, people I've had to cancel. I've got them rebooked for a couple weeks out. Hopefully all goes well and I can do that. And yeah, I'll keep you guys updated with what's going on. But for now, we are monitoring the situation. I'm taking some medication to, you know, try to keep these symptoms under control. And for anybody else who has been dealing with endometriosis or deals with endometriosis, you know, we had Cassie, the endometriosis warrior, on an episode before.
That was a long time ago.
Yeah, this fucking sucks. So not exactly a club I wanted to be part of, but I've got even more empathy for all y'all now, because this has been a very unpleasant ride for the last couple of years, and the last week has been really fucking hard. But I will just say, I had the best people literally just step up and take care of me. Not that I didn't know that. You know, I have three friends. One of them is actually a family member. She's my cousin.
When you said three friends, all I hear is...
we're the three best friends. Oh, I have three girlfriends that are, you know, the ones that I've sort of remained closest with
baby
since
Carlos.
High school. One of them is actually my cousin, but she did go to my high school, and then two others. And the night that I found out I was going into surgery, you know, the four of us are in a group chat. I just sent a message and let them know what was happening. And like, all of them have small children. One of them has a 4-month-old currently. One of them has a not even 2-year-old. And the other one has a 3-year-old. I mean, that's just their youngest. They all have multiple children. And they knew that Mark was going to be leaving the next day. And they took shifts. They were coordinated. They brought me slippers. They brought me water. They brought me headphones and stuff to entertain myself. And, you know, there was always one of them there helping me to get in and out of bed and helping me walk around the hospital. And it was honestly, I was like, not that I didn't know that they would be, but like, you know, when like you really think about it, like if something really major happened, like, do you, I mean, I know you're confident in like who the people are that would just like drop everything. I think I was like kind of just in shock. Like, these three just dropped fucking everything and took care of me for 2 days until I got to go home to my mom's house. So that was really fucking cool. I had a whole gang of girls that just took care of me while I didn't have my husband with me. So they were freaking incredible. One of them is the queen of fitness. So when I was finally allowed to eat, she was the one that volunteered to bring me food.
Unbelievable.
And on one hand, this is a good thing because I should be eating really healthy. On the other hand, I'm like, damn, my first food is going to be like gluten-free, dairy-free.
Which
it should be.
What were the items that were brought to you?
What she brought me? Yeah. Actually, you know what? She did really, really good. She brought me a plethora of things. She brought me homemade minestrone soup.
Okay.
She brought me a homemade burger patty. Like, she had made burgers the night before for her husband's birthday party, which I was supposed to be at. She brought me grapes, green grapes. She brought me cucumbers with hummus.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought me homemade chocolate muffins that were made mostly of almond flour and zucchini.
This is where you lose me. Homemade what?
Chocolate muffins.
Continue.
That were made with mostly almond flour and zucchini and
so
coconut.
Basically, it doesn't taste good. I don't get it. It doesn't taste good.
Oh, she brought me protein powder the day before when I was on a liquid diet.
Can we stop pretending the protein balls and the fake fucking the fake desserts taste good. We all know it doesn't taste good.
Mark hates going to her house because it's only health food.
You know it doesn't taste good. I understand why you consume it, and I'm proud of you for doing so. But don't pretend it tastes good when you know goddamn well it doesn't taste good. I just come out and say they taste like crap. I do it because I like the way I feel.
Okay, listen,
like the way
I'll give
look.
You, I'll give you the protein balls. I'm actually not a huge fan of the protein balls, and I'm sorry if you're listening, Kat.
Does not taste.
I love that you took care of me, but I'm not a huge fan of them. I'll give you the protein powder. Like it's not, you know, it's not a milkshake. It's not going to be fantastic. I actually don't hate the protein powder she uses, but fine. But I'm telling you, those chocolate muffins tasted good.
I'm just saying, in general.
Well, anyway. Oh, and she also brought me an apple and some gluten-free pretzels. Like she literally loaded up a bag and brought me all these snacks, which was super helpful because even when I went home the next couple of days, like the last thing I wanted to have to think of was preparing food. And I mean, my mom prepped food for me while I was at her place, which was nice. Your mom was making food while I was here, which was nice. But they were making food mostly for the kids. So a lot of what they were making was really too heavy for what my body was ready for. So all of her healthy snacks were actually quite helpful over the next few days because I couldn't really eat a lot, but I needed to eat. So I was just picking at what she packed for me. Anyway, that's the story. I don't know if you have anything to add, but that's how my last 7 days have gone.
Good times. Good times.
It's been a party.
Right on. This was fun. You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Praise.